Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
The One Tough Mother Podcast. The One Tough Mother Show is real talk with special guests, including industry leaders, celebrities, and amazing women who've overcome adversities to work their way to the top and are willing to share their real life lessons. Remember, you don't have to be a mother to be one tough mother. It's all about you.
And we're here. Hi, welcome to the One Tough Mother Show. We're excited that you're here with us again this week. And it's been a really crazy week. I got a lot of stuff going on, as always, and so does Seth. How was your Easter, Seth?
Oh, it was good. I told you last time that my 10-year-old was playing cello with the church orchestra.
Yeah, that's cool, yeah.
And so we thought he was going to practice on Sunday morning. It was actually, he had a play at church. We didn't know.
You didn't tell me that.
Yeah. What? No, we didn't know either.
They just kind of threw it at him.
And he was up there playing with the band. But good thing he practiced. And yeah, he did great. I have video of it. It's really cool.
Oh, that is really, really cool. I think it's nice.
Yeah, he sat in with the orchestra and played. And it was really nice.
Did they ask him now to come to practice? It's like a kid, just step in every Sunday.
No, because they only do the orchestra like a couple times a year.
Oh.
So it just happened to be Easter and Christmas. So.
Oh,
and their
okay.
cellist disappeared, so he stepped in. Yeah, it was great. It's a great experience for him, and he's going to have his spring concert coming up, so it's cool.
Oh, that's really cool.
And also, we did a little Easter egg hunt around the house. Outside the house, I hid the eggs, and they were my daughter was sleeping, so she missed out, and she forgot about it, which is good.
Right.
But, yeah, I have video of my son. He found the tough one in the gutter. I made the mistake. I bought these eggs, they're Paw Patrol eggs. I was like, okay, they have candy in them. Worst candy ever. It was disgusting.
Oh, dude, that's
why
they put it
in. Of course, my son loves
it.
I was like, you could eat one, and then I'm throwing out the rest. I was like, where's the chocolate? I was like, oh, God. I totally blew it, but they had fun, and it was good.
Yeah, we had a big Easter egg hunt. We usually do. We have, I think we put out, I'm just counting in my mind, I think we put out over 80 eggs.
Wow.
So my oldest grandsons, now that they're like 10 and 12, actually,
where's the money?
Exactly. So it's dollar bills and then the big, big prize egg that I make sure my three sons hide like really hard is a $5. And then my little grandchildren, I did pennies, dimes, and nickels because they like putting them in their bags. But it's so funny because the ones that like, okay, so the oldest grandkids get 20 eggs. Then the rest all go to the little kids. And you see them pick up the eggs without the money. And they know the difference.
Of
At like 2 to 4, they pick them up. They're like, ah. Oh. They go to the next. Yeah. It was fun, though. We had a great, great time. It was actually sunny, which was like a total and complete shock because we haven't had any sunny weather. So.
That's true.
Yeah, I was really super excited about it. And, you know, it was fun. Mail manager mom had her usual good time, cooked up a storm. So it was a fun time with the family.
You remind me of my son used to call it Pinky Bank.
Pinky Bank.
The Pinky Bank.
Oh, that's cute.
I took them roller skating too yesterday.
Oh, we did?
The boys, yeah.
Dude, I would have gone with you. I have my own skates.
Yeah, I don't want to be seen with
you
outside
of
here.
Yeah, I didn't think you did, you son of a bitch. Anyway.
But it's great. You know, I was skating behind my 4-year-old and I was like picking him, like not letting him fall. And I realized, oh, he has to fall.
You can't learn how to roller skate.
You have to fall. So I just let him start falling. And he actually likes falling. He's like, oh, cool. And got himself back up and he got some balance going. So it was good.
Do you ice skate?
A little bit. I mostly was a roller skater, rollerblader.
I rollerblade, roller skate, and my sister and I were huge ice skaters. So when it comes to ice skating, I'll go with you.
I just reminded me, my daughter's name is Talia, so she always says, I, Talia. So I can't only think about that movie, I, Tanya. She just walks around saying, I, Talia.
I, Talia.
I said, just don't hit anybody in the leg with a stick.
She is a wild thing. She will be doing that as well.
Yes, probably.
Oh, wow. So Everything was good. We have a great guest. And this woman, like, she is so awesome. She flew all the way in from Minnesota. Not just for us, I'm sure, but still.
It's big pretty, sky country.
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed. She came in from another place to see us. That's pretty cool. Get that, everybody. We're cool. Anyway, today's guest is an incredible woman. And she has an incredible story. Dr. Shannon Klingman is an obstetrician gynecologist from Minnesota who is shifting the narrative on how and why people stink. Yes, ma'am, or yes, sir. Okay. As the founder and inventor of Lumi, an all-natural aluminum-free deodorant, Dr. Klingman discovered an outstanding odor control product that solves odor control. I mean, cut this in. That solves odor concerns below the waist and also an extremely effective underarm deodorant. It's with excitement and pleasure, and we're so happy to welcome, and we hope you love New York, Dr. Shannon Klingman. Yeah, and I hit myself with a mic on that one. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. You guys are so warm here.
Really?
Warm-hearted.
Just us?
Yeah, I think this is the warmth pod of New York City.
It's just our on-air persona. So,
we're not really.
I'm kidding.
Wait until we get outside of here. So what do you think of New York so far?
We're really enjoying it. The people have been very nice, and the coffee's good, and the bagels are even better than Minnesota. Oh,
it's the water.
Yeah.
Dude, they always say it's the water in New York. Did you have pizza yet?
And after that, not yet, but that's on the list. Maybe tonight we'll have pizza.
You need pizza.
Yeah.
Pizza is a need here. And in fact, my mom's always like, bring a pizza home from the city. But by the time you get it home, it tastes like you got it out of a box.
So, yeah.
It doesn't matter. So let's talk about you and what you do. So you're an OBGYN doctor, which is an obstetrician gynecologist, and you're married to an OBGYN doctor, which is an obstetrician gynecologist.
Yeah.
And so you really do know what it's like. What made you start this journey? What made this whole deodorant smell product, how'd you get started on it?
Well, you know how something gets in your mind and it bothers you and it won't leave you alone.
Absolutely, Seth.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry.
Ouch.
So I got into, I was in my residency training and I recognized that, women are coming in with complaints of odor, no matter what the reason was for the visit, whether it was just their annual pap smear or sometimes an OB visit or a bladder infection, but they would often bring up, sometimes I notice like I'm a little funky from time to time, a little odor, maybe I have an infection, I don't know, have a new partner, and you test them, and it's a really imperfect way to try and get at what's going on when the testing that we do is so absolutely imperfect. And it bothered me, and I would say, do you guys ever feel like we're just randomly treating every woman with odor with antibiotics and just it goes away, but none of the lab tests really confirm it?
Right.
And so carried on with my training, go see 10 more patients. You got another patient waiting. And so you just continue to see patients, and that frustration started to build, and you start to accept it like, I guess this is just the way it is. Because in my training, nobody questioned it. And then I got into private practice and I thought, okay, enough. I'm noticing that time after time, women have said they've been treated for conditions like bacterial vaginosis in the past. And yet they're saying it comes up every 6 weeks, I'm noticing it again, or around my period, or when I work out, or I have a new sexual partner. I notice this odor and it comes up from time to time. And my doctor gives me antibiotics, but it always seems to come back. So fast forward now, my husband and I are trying to have a baby and we're having frequent intercourse. And I mean frequent because, we're OBGYNs. We know how to get it done. So I was post-call, up all night, hadn't showered, sat down to go to the bathroom, and I noticed that odor that women complain of. And I thought, do I have bacterial vaginosis?
Holy cow, I'm a doctor.
I think I have this, because that odor was so familiar. And then I did some checking around and I realized that this odor was all external. The vagina was fine. It was not a vaginal odor. It was all external. And then I came home and said to my husband, I think the reason BV is such a pain in the butt diagnosis for women, that they just can't seem to shake it once they're given that diagnosis, is because this odor happens very commonly with day-to-day activities we engage in, like intercourse or working out or with our periods or not showering. And this is an external odor. What would it take to prove that? And it's like, nobody's ever talked like that before.
Right.
So we hired a lab to help us out, and we discovered that those odors that women experience in day-to-day life are indistinguishable from the odors that women get when they have an actual vaginal infection.
Oh.
So it's no wonder doctors are over-diagnosing this condition.
Right.
So then I thought, okay, so if it's an external process, nobody's talking like this. I would talk to my partners about it, other OBGYNs, and they would say, like, well, yeah, you know, but that's not what it is, though, because it's that kind of fishy odor that smells like BV. And so what I decided was, well, there's an external solution for this if there's, you know, an external problem. So I created one and went through all the process of testing and developing all that, and then determined that Lumi blocks that odor reaction 100% for these types of odors that happen basically between our butt cheeks, if I can be so frank.
Right. So yeah. Wait a minute. How do you create that? I mean, how do you start that process?
So with a lot of self-discovery, I think it all started with being raised by a woman who was an RN. We talked about anything. I was very comfortable with my body.
Right.
Checking it out. Then I'm a gynecology resident, you know, so right. I'm living it every day. And I'm also a woman, very comfortable. So it was a lot. It was just some self-discovery and some checking around and really getting to know, where are these odors coming from? You don't even want to know.
Right.
How I know.
You know what? Yeah. I'm looking at her thinking, don't say anymore.
Yeah. Stop enough. Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so how did you know what was going to block it?
So what I looked at was the type of odor molecule that's formed. It's a long word called trimethylamine.
Okay.
TMA. And there's other conditions where trimethylamine is formed, and one of them is in individuals with metabolic conditions where they can't metabolize certain proteins. And when those proteins reach the large bowel, anaerobic bacteria in our larger bowel, you know, the stinky part of our guts, digest those proteins, they release this molecule called trimethylamine. So I looked at the chemistry of how the bacteria actually interact with these proteins that are found in semen, blood, the nitrogen containing things in urine, sweat, and how bacteria digest that and what's necessary. And I created a hostile environment for it with my product. So the bacteria are there and the bodily fluids are still there, but they don't dance together and odor doesn't form.
Oh, that's awesome.
So looking at it that way,
yeah,
it's a little different.
But how did you know what chemical to use?
So it went to my kitchen, and I started just looking around with some things in the kitchen. And the first rough draft of Lumi basically burned my skin, but it solved the odor problem.
Oh, wow.
So then I worked with formularies, and we take that reaction between bacteria and bodily fluids. We knew that it needed to block that reaction. It also needed to be safe for the skin. And so I consulted with a friend of mine about it, and he said, you know, you need to write a patent and you need to get in touch with some people who can help you formulate this. And so that's what I did. And without giving away any trade secrets,
of course.
Yeah, Lumi is very innovative, and we think about odor in a whole different way. We're not thinking about end odor. You know, like products they'll solve body odor, underarm odor, and they're masking it or covering it up with fragrance, or they'll neutralize odor after it happens.
Right.
People will focus on foot odor. That odor molecule is different from what forms in our underarms. Odor molecules that form in different parts of our body are different. But by taking that reaction back to the bacterial level and inhibiting how they lunch or metabolize these fluids that lead to odor, we were able to solve odor anywhere on your body. So
Shannon, this is all natural, right? You got this from your kitchen.
I got it from my kitchen. And, you know, there's things in it that when we started off, I didn't need to have aluminum in it. It never even occurred to me to put aluminum in it because I was solving odor below the belt. And so when we had it clinically tested and we discovered that it was also a superior odor control product for underarms, we thought, okay, so what do we need to do to make it an appealing formula? I don't want it to stain my clothes.
Right.
It's got to wash out.
Right.
I don't want heavily scented fragrance oil cover-ups.
Right.
Don't want, you know, so there were some things, some pain points and some things that I wanted to have for myself because I'm a stinker and I'm a major sweater. And I needed to have a formula that was appealing to me in that way. And it just ended up, we started off like, should we do an underarm product and a feminine hygiene product and a foot product? But then it ended up, it was the same formula.
Oh,
so
wow.
There's no reason to split it out.
That is incredible. And actually, she sent it to me, Seth, and I've been using it for 2 weeks, just so you know.
Oh, thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. Yeah. It's incredible. It really is.
Thank you.
You know, at first, I thought, I don't know. Then by like day three, I was like, holy cow, this is working out. Now, the one thing is, people say, well, do you, because I've been telling everybody, do you sweat? Yeah, you're going to sweat.
Right.
But it's not, you're not going to smell like sweat at all. So it really does work. So there's a component in all these natural ingredients that is actually blocking the odor, or it's actually just dispersing the odor. Like, you don't even have the odor to block.
So the odor never forms.
Yeah.
So the odor is something that people have been trying to solve this. And I think that the reason we have been so successful is because more women are getting into leadership positions and they're looking at things through a different lens. We will, I think, find in all industries that our problem solving abilities will improve.
I think it's incredible. It really is.
Because as women are, you know, we go to the gynecologist. Who else, you know, has their feet in stirrups with their knees apart and their bottom right in the face of a doctor,
right,
3 feet away? And so you're thinking, if men had to go through that, I think this problem would have been solved back in 1850.
Right.
You know? Right.
And you know what? Who would know odor better than you guys, than doctors?
That's
especially
right.
Gynos. Like,
yeah.
That's what I thought of when I saw it. I hate to say it, but that's the truth. But you know what? Now that you're saying that, since 1850.
Mm-hmm.
You told me that nothing has changed in the deodorant smell since 1850?
Well, it started, the whole feminine hygiene industry really started in the late 1800s with a product called Lysol.
Believe it? Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It is true.
That's probably some guy's idea.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Put this Lysol on.
So, well, not even on, up, inside, douching.
What?
They were using Lysol for douching, and women died and were poisoned by it.
God.
They marketed these like torture machines that you kept in your next to your bathroom like a toilet bowl cleaner, and it was a douching pump, like a butter churn.
Oh my God.
You know, you increase the pressure and it wasn't a good scene. And then when women started having problems with it, they decided that they should be recommending you dilute it out.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You know, yeah. But the ads they took out were like, you know, Debbie was a wonderful housemaker and mother, and she was a wonderful cook, but she neglected her vaginal hygiene, and so now her husband must leave.
Oh.
So he's like walking out the door with a briefcase, you know. So
I wrote that. No, I know. It's funny as heck.
Oh,
so
God.
It started that way, and then the products that have since followed still continue with that same narrative of vaginal odor, vaginal concerns, or feminine odor. And they've made it portable. They've made it something that is maybe a lot less toxic, but still wrong nonetheless, because a great study came out in 2007, I think you'll find interesting, where there was a group of women that had vaginal complaints, and they were blindly given off to doctors where doctors didn't get to see them, but it was a complaint of odor or itching. And a sample of their vaginal discharge was given, and the doctors evaluated it. Doctors overdiagnosed bacterial vaginosis 61% of the time, and they overdiagnosed yeast infections in the vagina 73% of the time.
Holy cow.
So we know that doctors are overdiagnosing, and we know that they are wrong more than they're right.
Right.
And so this, it was just was fell right in line with my suspicion of, is this an external process? And then if it is, which we proved that it is, can I develop something to solve that, which we did? And then through clinical testing, discovering you can use it anywhere on your body makes it appealing for men and women. But the thing that I love is that it's changing the narrative on feminine hygiene for women.
Absolutely. That's bizarre. And you know what? I went on your site, and you have some really, really powerful testimonial letters on there.
Mm-hmm.
There was one that I thought was pretty interesting. She was like, I've had this problem since I was 14. I actually wanted to commit suicide because I was bullied so much having this problem, and that your product worked. That has to mm-hmm. make you feel like amazing.
It makes me feel like there's a reason that I went to medical school, and I enjoyed private practice a lot. But I think I'm 48 years old and think, man, I'm old. You know, when you compare yourself to these young kids in their mid-20s, while I still feel like them and I can, you
right.
know, talk to them and stuff, I think there's no way at 25 I would have ever had the life experience, the wisdom, the confidence to be able to do what I'm doing now. And so when I hear from these women, I think they're talking to me.
Right.
They're talking about me. I see myself in them. I struggled myself with body odor and finding products that worked. And I felt like I went between really strong BO to other to products that I would use where you get like that, you know, floral or baby powder, ocean breeze mixed right. with BO in right. your clothing, and had the stains in my underarms. And, you know, it was so I can identify with them. And so when I hear from them, it makes me feel like I'm doing a good work.
Right. And you know what's funny, too, because when my using it, I noticed you don't smell it after an hour or two, right?
No, we are fragrance oil free, so there's nothing permanent there.
Right.
The essential oils that we use are lavender and clary sage, and it fades within an hour.
Yeah,
and it's gone. Pretty much goes to nothing. Yes.
Which I like, because I'd rather have like my body lotion or something yeah. else have the scent than like some heavy underarm thing.
Yeah.
The other thing is, a lot of my friends have breast cancer, mm-hmm. and I'm going to say almost every one of my friends either is getting over it, had it, or is, you know, in the process of treatment, mm-hmm. and they all question the aluminum in deodorant for blocking, you know, any kind of underarm, you know, drop blocking sweat. Your lymph nodes are there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that does do you think that makes sense?
I think that there probably is an element to that, even though the studies have all shown that there is no causal link. I think it's like many things. There has to be a genetic predisposition, and we don't know what does aluminum do on the gene level for people who may already have a predisposition. And so my sister was diagnosed with breast cancer when she was 40, and you get really straight right away with what you're putting on the largest organ of your body, which is your skin.
Right.
And while that's not the reason I developed it, I didn't avoid aluminum because of breast cancer. I just developed this product and it just happened to be aluminum free, which is what people are looking for.
Right.
But as an OBGYN, I do think that it is not a good idea to put a heavy metal on your skin every day.
Right.
So if you can, I was sweating past the aluminum anyway. I still had right. big baloney wet
marks. I'm a sweater too,
yeah.
because I work out all the time. So when you work out and you do a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. your body automatically, when you start walking or doing anything, starts metabolizing.
Right.
So and people are like, well, am I going to sweat when I wear it? Yeah, but guess what, my friend? Your body's made to sweat for a reason.
Right.
And I don't understand why people don't get that. It's like, you know, you breathe in and out. Okay, the bad stuff's coming out. So I'm like, you need to sweat. Your body needs to sweat.
Yeah, right.
And they don't like that.
And it's once you get comfortable with that, where the perspiration's there, like sweat happens, but odor doesn't have to, is what
right.
what I tell myself is that I stunk no matter what. And when I was the medical expert in Minneapolis for one of the TV stations there, I would get off the air and I literally would have like an 8-inch ring under my pit. And I'd be like, I'm using a clinical strength antiperspirant here and nothing's cutting this,
right?
you know? So I thought, I'm wrecking my clothes with the aluminum. And so this is a good thing. So when I started using the feminine hygiene product that I developed on my underarms before we had it tested, I'm saying, is this possible that this water-based cream that's basically a lotion is eliminating odor for me? And it was, but my clothes didn't stink, and I didn't have those yellow marks, and it was good. So for me, it's a win. I like the total body odor control aspect of it, and I love that it's a lotion and it's virtually undetectable after, you know, you rub it into your skin. And
I think it's awesome, and the fact that you invented it as for below the belt, mm-hmm. basically,
yeah,
and then you went to the underarms. Then I read the story, or I saw the story about Marin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, let me tell you something. Nothing really makes me cry. Mm-hmm. I'm tough as nails, damn it. But shut up, Seth. But Marin's mother, like at the end, I was really choked up because mm-hmm. I would be devastated if my kid was getting bullied or felt left out. Or explain to our audience a little bit about Marin's story.
So we launched Lumi in October of 2017. So we've just been on the market a little over 6 months. And I got a phone call about 3 weeks into our launch time from a mother. Actually, it was a Facebook message that I initially got saying that you are really onto something here. That she's not writing me this on behalf of herself, although she did try it and she loved it and she knows that it worked for her. She has a 5-year-old little girl named Marin who has a very rare metabolic condition called propionic acidemia. And the condition is so rare that she gets involved in these case studies with the National Institutes of Health, and she oftentimes is having to volunteer her daughter up for clinical studies and for trying new testing and looking for a cure. And there's a lot of metabolic conditions similar to Marin's, but in Marin's case, it was so rare. There was like she was one of two people in the country that had
wow.
it. And so, but the side effect for these individuals of a medication that they have to take to prolong their life called L-carnitine is that they smell like rotten fish. And Marin was diagnosed when she was just 2 weeks old. They picked it up on a newborn screen. So the life expectancy for her, had it not been picked up, would have been 5 to 6. But because it was detected with a newborn screen, the ability to intervene early on got treatment on board really quickly. And so they started the L-carnitine. And from that moment, she started to smell like fish. And she's like, her mom, Honey, said, you know, you can imagine you bring your new baby over to meet family, or the friends see her at Target. And it's like, oh, your baby. And then they kind of, oh, here you go. And they give her back, or they don't want to hold her.
How sad is that?
And then growing up, it meant the healthier she was, the more carnitine she needed, and so the more odor that they noticed. And she was concerned for her future, but she was just so grateful that she was healthy. And when she put her into school in kindergarten, the kids were all nice, and the teacher was nice, and they were excited to have her, and Marin was really glad to be in school, and Honey was over the moon to have her in school because she was now 5 years old, and she was approaching that age where a lot of families lose their children, but Marin's future looked really bright.
Right.
And she had a teacher that then commented to her that while they loved Marin and she was just recently, you know, confirmed to be pregnant, and she struggled with the odor and didn't know if she was going to be able to have her in her classroom anymore.
Right.
And to watch that and to have children say, can you go sit over here? Can you not sit by mm-hmm. me? Was really difficult for her. And they tried Lumi. After seeing us on an ad, somebody had posted that their daughter had a rare metabolic condition, and they discovered Lumi, and it worked. And I knew nothing about this, but Marin saw it, Honey saw it and tried it on her daughter Marin, and she said, and she's been odor free with one application for 3 days.
Unbelievable!
That's amazing. That must make you feel so good,
right?
Marin is my my testimony to being worth it.
Right?
She's. Because what was so remarkable to me was that it was the science that causes the odor for Marin that I used to develop Lumi, that fishy odor, that
right.
trimethylamine, which doesn't have anything to do with underarm odor. You know, this is a different odor reaction. And so the fact that she was able to use it made me feel like, you know, wow, this was bigger than me. This little seed that got planted, you know,
it's
20
amazing.
Years ago that now is here.
Wow, she rocks, Seth, right?
That's amazing.
Yeah, we don't have that big a brain.
I do have a question, though. Going back, you mentioned that yeast infections are misdiagnosed like 73% of the time. How is that laziness, or is it getting a false test, false positive? I mean, I'm just curious.
I think that sometimes the assumption is everything that itches is yeast and everything that smells is BV, or bacterial vaginosis. And then there's these criteria that we use. But if a woman comes in complaining of itch and discharge, she's going to be diagnosed with yeast vaginitis more times than not, whether she has it or not. And I think that it requires doctors to put a little bit of discharge on a microscope, maybe send off some tests, think beyond what's common, and that it's easiest to go with what's easiest.
Right.
And that's the yeast story. With bacterial vaginosis, we use criteria to diagnose that. And there's, you know, 5 different criteria, and there's a lot of things that will give it a false positive, like a high pH can happen in post or perimenopausal women. A high vaginal discharge pH can happen with periods. It happens after intercourse. And so you already have exposure and reasons why doctors would get this wrong. And then when they smell that characteristic slight fishy odor, they think, oh, it's BV.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, they're busy. It makes a lot of sense. Okay, here's my next question. So now her husband and her are both doctors. So this is a walk in the park for you guys, right? I mean, this costs you nothing. You walked in your kitchen, you whip this crap up. Everything's good. Life is good.
It's not crap, Karen.
All right, whip this. You're right. It's not. I use it, actually. It's good mm-hmm. stuff. You whip it up and everything's good, right? It was nothing, right?
Mm-hmm. I think if it was easy, everybody would do it. I think it would have been around back instead of Lysol. They would have had something like Lumi back then, right?
So it's cost you a lot in your family.
Yeah, my husband and I really have. I mean, I feel hesitant to say it out loud, but we've risked everything. everything on this. It's not inexpensive to file for patents. We have two patents that have been granted, utility patents, and we have a third one pending, and we have other products in the pipeline and different applications that we're working on patenting for. And then just formulating it, all the trial and error, the people you trust that take advantage of you.
Absolutely.
And they sucker punch you.
Absolutely.
Know?
In the throat.
Yeah, right in the throat.
Right.
Yeah. And you have a decision to make. Do I give up now or do I keep going? And every time we stand up and we keep going, yeah, because we believe in it.
Right. And it's amazing how much you do put into something. People think that, oh, well, you being doctors, well, they have a disposable income. They can just throw so much money behind it, blah, 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 blah. They don't understand patents. Not only is a patent very, very expensive, but then you have to fight mm-hmm. a lot of times for your patent. Mm-hmm. So then there's attorney fees involved. Like I've been through this whole process because of my previous job. So I know how mm-hmm. much it can cost yeah. to get a patent.
Thankfully, I surrounded myself with really great people, and I was able to find a patent writer that used to work for Kimberly-Clark. He worked for Kimberly-Clark for 25 years, I believe. And that's what I did. I looked and I saw, who's writing all the patents on feminine hygiene? Who's this Jeff Lindsay guy? I want him.
Right.
And so we contacted him and got in touch with him, and we're still friends and partners, and he's still doing the writing for us now.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But you know what, Shannon, in the meantime, this has been 11 years, right?
11 years since we really started. You know, we're talking idea back in residency, but 11 years ago, we took our first step off the curb.
Right, but you still had life going on, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about like what was happening. You were having kids and married and jobs. Tell us about your life.
So my husband and I had the idea for Lumi. You know, I had it. I take all the credit.
Good,
years
good
ago, because I'm the
girl.
One with the vagina, right?
I like
so,
that. Yes.
So then, when we took a step off the curb 11 years ago, it really was trusting somebody to help guide us. That's when we started the patent writing process, which it's not just a wham bam. Thank you, ma'am. Tell me your story, and let's file, and it's all done.
Right.
There's a lot of language that needs to be used, and you need to cover your bases in order to protect this idea. And we brought some investors on board that really took advantage of us. And thankfully, I mean, it cost us money, but we were able to move past it.
Right.
And I think that because we weren't financially destroyed by that, we were able to save up, and we risked a lot, but then we're able to finance the process again. So now we're on phase two. And you go through rejections with patents, and you need to change your claims and such. But our patent writer just kept fighting for it. And then he had to move to China and wasn't able to work with us again. And so I had to find another patent writer who kind of screwed it all up for us. And we got a final rejection. Thankfully, he found out about it in China and got special dispensation from his employer over in Shanghai. And they said, okay, go ahead and mop up this mess for this family. Yeah, go ahead and, you know, you started it, now finish it. And that he got permission to do that. And he did. He stepped right in and worked quickly and got us back on track. And then we were getting 2 and 3 rejections. And when you get a rejection, they're saying there's somebody out there who already has a similar idea or application.
Correct.
So while you can manufacture it and use it, you're not protected. And so he challenged that and said, no, we're not changing our claims. These arguments are incorrect, and just kept fighting for it, and then got a hard final rejection. And I said, okay, then we're done. And the reason I really felt like life goes on, my husband and I have Julia and Jonah, our little grade schoolers, and then we had a daughter, Amy. And
take your time.
I had quit practice when my youngest son, who's now 9, soon to be 10 next week. We decided, my husband and I were both OBGYNs, and we were so busy with practice that somebody needed to take one for the team and be available at home to dock the boat, and that was me. So after Jonah was a year old, I quit practice and was home, always knowing that we were working on this project, waiting
Absolutely.
For patents and such, and not giving up. But it would have been foolish to launch it without the patent protection. And during that time, I became pregnant with my fourth child, and we found out that we were having a little girl when she was 12 weeks along in pregnancy, and her genetics testing came back that she had trisomy 21. And I always felt like, as a little girl, I had neighbors with kids with Down syndrome, and I was like mother's helpers for them and would go and play with them while their moms did laundry or ran to the grocery store. And I really have had a heart for individuals with special needs.
Right.
And it seemed like I was just always finding my way into the homes and families of people who had kids with Down syndrome. And so when people would say, God doesn't hand you anything more than what you can handle, I mean, this is even in junior high and high school, I would get a whisper in my ear that would say, you're going to have a baby with Down syndrome.
That's crazy.
I'm not kidding you.
Believe you, absolutely. Yeah.
And so when I found out that Amy had Down syndrome, I thought, well, here, this is it. Okay, here we go, game on.
Right.
And I, from the moment, I thought, who better? My heart is ready, right. And I want to raise her. Right. I cannot wait. And I just worried about her health and safety during the pregnancy. And my pregnancy was very uneventful. I was healthy. She was healthy. She had a normal heart. She had very little signs at all that even showed that she had Down syndrome. I was far more worried than my doctors, is what I will say. I was over the top concerned that something bad was going to happen, and they were so laid back about it that it made me feel uncomfortable to bring it up again. They'd be like, Shannon, you're the lowest risk of all the high risk pregnancies we have. You need to relax. You're not the doctor here. You're not in charge. Right. And so when Amy was born, and then this is how it happened. I was at home and I noticed that I was having contractions, and I was so excited for her. They were coming like maybe every 20 minutes and very mild, but I started the nesting,
yes,
packing the bag, and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, she's coming any day. It was full term, and I think today's the day. And that night I said to my husband, I'm having contractions. And he said, no, you're not in labor. I said, no, I mean, I'm tolerating them because I'm one tough mother.
Right.
I mean, I'm not complaining, but I'm having them, you know. And so I listened to her heart tones with a Doppler and the baby monitor and contraction, and I noticed her heartbeat dropped. And then we listened to it again. And so he rushed me to the hospital and made a phone call on his way there and said, I'm bringing my wife in. I'm an OBGYN, and I need whoever else is on call to come in. And they delivered me by stat C-section. And she ended up in the neonatal intensive care unit and just didn't tolerate labor. And we got to the high risk. They sent her down to Children's, the high risk hospital there, where she could be at the NICU and be monitored more closely. But unfortunately, she just didn't recover. She didn't tolerate labor. She didn't tolerate contractions because I just had testing not long before then, and she was doing great.
Right, right, right.
So after I lost Amy, she was 2 days old. I wanted to die.
Right.
It hurt to breathe. I don't know if you know that feeling, the joy you feel of holding your newborn baby, but the total opposite of that is losing them, and that you make noises in grief that you never have ever heard yourself make before, and you know your life is never going to be the same again. But yet your kids are still saying, Mom, I need a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
And, you know, you still got to bathe them.
Yep.
Their toenails still need trimming, and you're still going through life that way. And so I thought, I was just working on breathing day to day. And then we got our final rejection for Lumi, and I said to my patent writer, I'm done. We've been working on this for 8 years now, I think it was at the time. And about 3 years of it was patent arguments. And I just said, we're done. I'm glad that you think it's a great idea. And I think it's a great idea too. And it's a great product, but I just don't have it in me. And he said, I'm going to call you back in 5 days, if it's okay with you. Ask you to think about it. So in 5 days, he called me and he said, I'm going to do this because I believe in you. And I'm going to do it pro bono. And I'm going to fight for this because it's not very often in this industry of the Procter's and Gamble's and the Unilever's of the world where you see a one-off inventor funding their own progress, their own product and the process, and comes up with something so innovative that it would have taken some other company, a team of 100 and, you know, 15 years to do with all the research and development. And you've just been able to do this on your own. It's quite impressive. And so with all due respect, I'm going to not honor your decision to not pursue it, and I'm going to fight harder. So that's what he did. And he got our got me a phone call with the USPTO office, the trade office.
That's amazing
patent office.
In itself, right?
They get on the phone with me and they asked me a lot of questions. And at the end, they said, congratulations, we're going to give you your claims.
Amazing.
Wow. So we had our first patent, and then the second one came about a year later. And that was about 2 years ago. And so now we've been just working really hard. I've been full time at this now. It was a year in February.
I am so, I'm just so impressed.
It's still frustrating too, though, right? What's the holdup? If you have, what is it? Are there legitimate claims, or you just have to nag these people into?
I think first of all, there's an idea now in the patent office that maybe nothing new is out there, so it's very difficult to convince them that you have anything unique and novel, and it's an uphill battle. But
that's terrible.
But in the meantime, through
I'm
all
so
of
glad,
this,
yeah, I'm so glad yeah, you got through
I'm
it.
I'm so Thank glad you. He really pushed for you. There are good people in the world, thank God. But in the meantime, through all of this, life is going on. You got a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about your
little
girl.
Yeah, so then my husband and I decided that after Amy, we were going to make our world just really small. And because people would thought you were just, you're better now, right? You know, 6 months ago, you lost your daughter, you're good, you know? And I was selling soap at the time. I was an artisan soap maker and making lip balms and shea butter whips and lotions and stuff, literally in this small studio within my house. And I was selling to Whole Foods and stuff, but it was very small, very cottage industry, farmer's market type stuff. And so I had been neglecting that through my, you know, my grief. I thought I'm going to be done with that too. I was just trying to figure out how to round it out and finish. And I got asked to participate in an event at one of the co-ops locally where I live. And I really didn't want to do it because I couldn't even stand to hardly talk to people. Because even the question, how are you doing? You know, I was like, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
Even to just say, oh, I'm good. You know, just seemed like somehow I was betraying my daughter because I wasn't good. But yet we give these use these platitudes. So I walked in with all my soap and I set up my display, and there was a person who called in sick and they lost their greeter at the front. And I said, well, I'll do it. And I thought, wow, I actually volunteered for that. I'm doing pretty good. So I set up the table, my soap, and I was really interacting with people. And I laughed at something that someone said. And that laugh in that moment, I heard, you know, and my voice to myself was, there she is. She's back. And I went home to my husband and I said, I did this event today and I'm so grateful that I did, because for the first time in a year, I'm seeing in color and I want to live and I see forward. And he said, okay, well, hold on to your boots and saddle, because there's a little girl that there's a family that has a baby that they want to place for adoption, and they want to talk to us about adopting her. And so I went into the hospital and I met the family, and the family was awesome. It was this great connection that we had, and we adopted their little girl. We didn't know if it was a girl or a boy. We didn't know if she was healthy or not, and we didn't care. We just wanted to raise a child, and we wanted more children, and we felt very blessed that day.
Amazing.
I think that the angels were shining down on us that day.
The whole way.
Mm-hmm.
The whole way. That's amazing.
It was a beautiful, it was a win-win. I couldn't say enough about our youngest daughter's birth family, the connection that we had, and just the sheer, just blessed event that it was. And it just felt right.
It's amazing. You're an amazing, amazing person. I just think that your story is amazing. I think everything you've done is amazing. And I think the fact that you're handling stink, it's just amazing.
I'm bringing confidence back, babe.
Yeah, thank goodness. But I think it's just, I loved Maren's story. Like I said, it was so heartbreaking to me that a little girl would be bullied over anything like this. And then the older woman, or the girl that wrote, that said she was been bullied since 14. I can see it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, without a doubt. Because in the workplace, there's always somebody that you're like, oh my God, he smells. Right?
That's the hard one to get past.
It is. Yeah. It's for some reason, like, smell is like so like it. Offensive, because you can't get away from it, I guess.
I feel like something's wrong with you. It's bad stigma.
Yeah. So how's it selling? Tell us about how it's going.
So sales are good. We launched in October. We're still very self-funded. We've not taken out any loans. We don't have outside investors. And so our sales are good enough that we're funding the growth. And I auditioned for Shark Tank in January. They did not call me back, by the way.
Well, they're foolish.
That's what I thought for sure. It went well. The pitch was perfect. They were like, great story. We're talking to the Home Shopping Network about going on there later in the summer. So some really exciting things are happening. The concept of Lumi resonates with women, but one third of our customers are men. So I know that they're hearing this message too. They want natural for their underarms.
Right.
And they don't want their boys to smell either.
Whoa.
I'm into it. I want to try it.
Yeah.
I love the name. I love the packaging too. I want the website. It looks great.
What is the name?
The name is Lumi.
Why?
Lumi deodorant Lumi just came because you have to come up with something that's not already trademarked and looks nice on a label. So it means luminous. So it's the luminous, the brightest part of you and, you know, confidence that follows from that. The private parts were Lumi deodorant for underarms and private parts. I'm a huge Howard Stern fan.
Me too.
I love Howard Stern. I'm one of those girls that I can handle that talk. And then when I see him on other shows, and I've been a fan since the 90s. And all, you know, through college, listened to him.
When I worked with Stern, she was her fan.
And I loved Robin. And I felt like, you know, when that movie came out, Private Parts, that he did, I knew that it really wasn't about, you know, our private parts, like genitals, right? Can you say that?
You can say it.
Yeah, okay. Oh. It was the private aspects of his life, and that he really is he comes across as a tough guy, but he's really a softie and has a big heart. And I don't know, I just kind of see through that, and I'd love to meet him someday.
Oh my gosh, we'll have to try to arrange that, won't we? So she can meet Howard and Robin or something. It would be a lot of fun. You'd be surprised. He's an okay
they
guy.
Used to talk about, they used to make fun of and talk about vaginosis on
he
the show.
Did see, so what I'm saying is
time.
We're changing the narrative on feminine hygiene. A lot of jokes have been cracked at the expense of women. And I think, okay, I can roll with that. The odor's there, yes. But we're going to school you on where it really comes from. And guess what? You have it too. Because yeah. He used to talk about that on his radio program, that like, I'm so hairy down there. I just feel like I don't get clean. I mean, you take a shower and I still smell.
Yep.
And it used to say something like, we need a product that's called Ass Don't Smell. And I thought, Lumi is that. So
there's a morning,
I got to get him a sample.
There's a morning show here that they put out a product called Junk Bomb.
There you
go. Oh, gosh.
True story.
So where can you find it? Where can we get it?
So Lumi is available on our website. It's LumiDeo.com. So LumiDeo.com. And it's available exclusively on our website right now. And so for right now, we're not planning on going into stores for the next year or so.
Okay, excellent.
It's Lumi, correct?
LumiDeo.com.
Right, but the product, too, I just Googled it and I found it, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get you some, Seth. Not that I say you don't
well, that's why I sit
stink.
Far away. That's why I sit
yeah.
this far away from
sit
you.
Sit over there.
Yeah.
Sit over there. I love it. I've tried it. I've been doing it for 2 weeks. I'm really happy with it. And it's seriously, I'm going to throw all the other deodorants away because I think it's a great product.
Thank you.
And so many of my girlfriends, like I said, have breast cancer or some kind of cancer or are battling something. So I'm definitely going to get it for them. I think it's amazing. I think you're amazing. Holy cow, I really like you.
I like you,
Minnesota
too.
And everything. But we'll be back in just a moment, and we're going to do, we've got mails in and we've got news, and if you can hang, you're welcome to hang.
The One Tough Mother Podcast. Real talk with amazing women who have worked their way to the top and want to share their real life lessons with you.
And we're back, and we have the usual headlines and headaches, and we got tough brother Seth with him. But before we do, again, I want to thank you, Dr. Shannon Klingman and Lumi. Is an amazing story. You're an amazing person, and it's amazing product. So it's a win-win all the way around. Thank you so much for being here, and you're going to sit in with us, right?
Yes,
hang
I'm
out.
Here, yeah,
yeah, hang out and see.
You
what's
don't
going
have a
on.
Choice.
You don't have a choice. We make you.
We can't.
The door's
open the door.
Locked. Yeah. You're not allowed to leave. So, tough brother Seth. Headlines and headaches.
Yes, you like watching TV. You're hired. Loving to watch TV and movies is finally a job requirement. Oh, where was this like 20 years ago when I could have used it?
Yeah, right. You've been on the couch for the rest of your life.
No, it would have been awesome. Netflix is looking for someone who possesses this skill to work as an editorial analyst. The catch is that in addition to binging on the streaming giant's content, you will have to summarize and rate it. You not only have to love binge watching, you would need at least 5 years of experience in the TV or film industry and be able to write with attention to detail. Still nice work if you can get it.
We got it, dude. Let's do this.
Oh, my God. No.
Are you kidding? Come on.
We've a couple times binged a little bit, and we have three kids and one coming. And
no,
yeah.
But we can sit on the couch. No, beer, wine, no. Potato chips, all the good stuff.
You get the wrong guy.
All right, forget it.
Not happening.
I don't like you that much.
No, I used to watch a lot more TV.
And I don't.
I'm glad that I don't. But this would have been a dream job for me back in the day, for sure. But there are some great shows on Netflix, too. I don't know if you have Netflix or use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Binging is the only way to do Netflix.
Well, but you can't help yourself.
That's right.
You know, and but that was, see, what's missing now is the beauty of TV back in the day was that anticipation of the next episode. You know, even like the Showtime
something
and HBO
to look
shows.
To. Yeah.
Like, I love Billions, you know, and I can only really watch on my commute. That's the only time I can watch on my phone. And I'm like, I look forward to it. But, you know, I could wait. But I can't binge anyway. I don't have time to binge. But there's something different about it. It's a different experience. And you know what happens also, real quick? I don't want to stay on this too long, but I had back surgery years ago. And I was home for 3 weeks, and I binge watch shows. They get into your brain, and like in my dreams, like Friday Night Lights, dumbest show ever about high school football. Like, I'm almost living this altered reality because I watched so much of that show in such a short period of time. It almost made me crazy.
You know what? I came from the industry, as you know, and here's what my thought process on this is. First of all, I don't watch television. I've not watched much television throughout my life because it was my industry.
Because you're better than me.
I'm better than you, and I watched it for numbers. Like, I was looking for better buys or how to put product into shows. I mean, that was my whole goal at watching. But people, they watch TV to escape reality. I really believe that.
100%. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, right?
Right, yeah.
And they really do believe in, like, oh, my God, did you hear what so-and-so said to so-and-so on this? Like, my daughters and my daughter-in-laws are so big on The Bachelor.
Oh, God.
Blah. And they'll be like, Ma, really, watch The Bachelor so you can talk about it with it. I don't want to talk about you with it.
and then you, like, grieve it. I remember the show Parenthood. When it went off the air, I was like, I missed those guys. It was an illness.
Right?
Yeah. You kind of identify with them, and, you know, and it's not a good habit.
Yeah. So, no, this is not a good job for us then. We're done with that. Okay, go to the next then, dude.
Okay, no, forget it. Sorry, Netflix. We're not coming.
We're not.
Student loans stifle home ownership.
Duh.
Student loans are keeping people from buying homes. Roughly 45 million Americans carry student loan debt. 45 million.
Yes.
Average borrower at least 30,000. CNBC reports is citing data from Student Loan Hero. Over 80% of those aged 22 to 35 who haven't purchased a house cite student loans as a primary factor, per the National Association of Realtors. Many are denied mortgages because of their debt-to-income ratio. This is a problem.
This is huge. Four kids.
We could do a whole show on this.
All my kids have student loans. Well, I think my oldest son might have finished his, but four kids, like, totally, thank you, God, in every aspect that they came out and they had great jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But some of their friends, huge, huge loans, no jobs. People I know that are really big in big industries are saying, I'm still carrying $50,000 in debt.
Yeah, and it's not like a $50 bill that you pay for the next 100 years. It's like a $1,500 a month for the next 5 years.
Yeah, you can't get a job, and they want you to pay $1,500 a month.
You know, it's almost like, should kids go, if they can't afford it, should they go right to college? Maybe you do a trade or do something and then go to school at night, or, you know, you might be better off doing it in a different way.
I don't believe in college as much anymore.
I don't either.
Because
you're not alone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's so many kids that don't have jobs.
I believe in higher education, but, you know, at what price?
Right.
There's ways around it if you want to be creative. Let's be honest. You know, going to college is an experience also. It's not just about the education. So I think that's the thing that people would miss the most. But, you know, if you can't afford it, you know, why are you going to bury yourself for how many years? People 10, 15 years later, still paying that stuff off.
Oh, please. At least 10, 15 years later. I agree.
And if you want to go to law school or med school, or my friend go to chiropractor school, you're just adding another 4 years on top of it.
My total bill, student loan bill, $170,000.
Jesus.
For undergrad and med school.
And that's not, you didn't even live in it.
I didn't live there, right.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, at least with a law school or med school, there's like an expectation of making more money, but the average graduate, they have to go find a job in their industry and start at the bottom.
Right. Yep. Well, I can see it. The country needs to fix this.
I started as a temp employee at my first company, making $8 an hour. You know, after graduating college.
Right. Yeah. I know.
It's crazy. All right. So sorry, everybody. You know, I don't know what to tell you. I played the lottery. I haven't won yet. All right. Could Offwork email be banned? Yes, please. All right.
Yes.
Technology was supposed to make our lives, work lives easier, but it turns out that many of us, it makes it even busier. Businesses can now hook workers around the clock almost every day of the year using messaging tools found on employees' phones. One New York City council member wants to put an end to it. According to CNN, Rafael Espinel, a council member from Brooklyn, introduced a bill last week that would make it illegal for businesses with more than 10 people to contact employees during off-work hours, including weekends and vacations. There's a lot of New Yorkers out there that don't know when their workday begins or when their workday ends because we're all so tied to our phones. And tired, yes. Mm-hmm. He told the CNN affiliate, businesses would receive small fines for contacting workers during off hours payable to workers themselves. What's your take on the proposed law? Join the conversation below. I don't agree with this, I got to say. As an employee, you got to be able to stake your ground. It's like, I have a family. I'm not going to be available this time. I'll help you when I can.
I agree with you, dude, but yeah. What are you going to do when the guy's like, okay, look, I'm paying you this amount of money. I want, you know, when I email you at 10:15 at night, answer me.
Tough noogies. I'm awesome, and you take me at my, when I can work, or, you know, find someone else.
Sweeping the streets.
At a certain point, you have to value yourself and what you bring to the table. If you're only valuable to this company 24 hours a day, then it's not the right job for you. You're going to run yourself ragged into the ground. You're going to have a family. You're going to die at 58 years old. And for what? Because you had to answer the beck and call of this guy? I'm sorry. You know, as a doctor, mm-hmm. stress is a killer. You're going to stress yourself out, like being available? No.
All right. I agree that they shouldn't be able to contact you. I've just been in positions my whole life where they do.
I'm saying you have to, as an employee, have to stand your ground.
Right.
And respectfully. You know, look, I have a family. I have kids. I got to make time for my family. I'm not gonna do it. Don't get me wrong. I'll get stuff done when it has to get done, but I'm gonna do it. I'm going to take time and make time for my family, block it out.
Right.
But unfortunately, it's the life world we live in, too.
It is the world we live in. It's sad, but true.
But for people he's talking about, I don't know. I don't see people... You know, I think you just have to be able to balance it yourself. And if there's a problem at home or your problem with stress, you have to recognize it and deal with it.
Right, right.
All right, Scott, this is depressing today.
Oh, stop!
Student loans
and for goodness sake.
Schools battle new vaping device. Wow, the news just keeps getting better. Just as the rate of smoking among teens has dropped, the use of nicotine-heavy e-cigarettes is exploding. Well, that's kind of an oxymoron right there, isn't it?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reports Wall Street Journal, leading this trend is Juul, J-U-U-L, a potent and cleverly marketed vaping device that comes in a variety of fruity flavors. Super. Parents and schools are now the front line of an effort to prevent teens from using the product, the health implications of which are still not clear, says the journal. Juul's website claims that one of its pods equals about a pack of cigarettes worth of nicotine. They claim that. Wow. And they're like bragging about it.
Yeah.
While vaping is likely healthier than smoking tobacco, its health effects are not well understood. And some researchers think that it's a gateway to smoking cigarettes. What's your take on vaping among teenagers? I'm not happy.
You're a doctor.
You ever seen somebody driving a small car vaping and they roll down the window? It looks like Cheech and Chong. And there's like, you know, coming out all the windows. But I don't see how they can get away marketing it fruit flavored when cigarette and cigar companies can't do that anymore.
Right.
It'll catch up to them. Yeah. Apparently we're all parents here, and then parenting comes into play.
He knew where I was going with that. Where are the parents? Mm-hmm. Seriously.
I don't know, his friends are doing it.
He's vaping. He's not smoking.
You know, not to get into this whole thing, but my 10-year-old's friends are playing Fortnite, and they shouldn't be playing Fortnite.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, you should know. Well, your kids are too old. You should see if your grandsons are playing. They might be.
Oh, I'm going to ask.
It's like a video game it's a violent video game that everyone's playing. It's so popular that when Drake was playing it was trending on social media that he was playing the game.
Oh.
It's insane.
I don't like that.
You know, my 15-year-old nephew is playing. I don't know, he might be old enough.
It's difficult, because they get it somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're playing it at their
phones
or on their phone. Yeah, or they're at school.
Right. It's a big thing now. Yeah. It just came out. Like, they're playing in school. Like,
play in school on their phone? Is that
my son has his phone with him all the time. I don't get that. They should check it at the door.
Right. Why do you have why do you need your phone?
Yeah, for the classes. Just in the classroom. You know, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have it. I understand we're in a different world safety wise today, maybe, you know.
But if class is boring, you want to be able to have something else to do.
Why couldn't you just throw
Fortnite and get your score up? Yeah.
Oh boy, that's bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's tougher and tougher. I'm nervous about my kids are young, so I'm nervous about as they get older how to navigate through this stuff.
Yeah, you gotta figure out how to put filters on your home internet.
I just threaten them with violence. Yes.
That's his answer to everything.
Yes.
I want to punch him and hit him.
I will crush your phone.
Listen to that. Nothing speaks louder than blood.
There you go.
I am going to use that so much throughout this show.
I love it, right?
Yeah, really.
Fear of God into them.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Let's. After Seth's done beating with his kids, we'll keep going. Seth, give us the next story.
I have a hammer with your phone.
All
right. Go smash your phone to pieces. Okay. You don't even have phones yet. See? But his friends all do. They're 10.
Oh my god.
No, you're not getting a phone. You're getting a flip phone. Yes. Call an emergency.
Get him
a ladybug phone. Ladybug was the kind of insect, wasn't it? The jitterbug.
Oh,
that's
like
all
that.
They can do is call
yeah.
home.
They can only call home at two other numbers. I fell, like the doctor.
No, I was giving him a megaphone and carrying his backpack. Yeah, just call me on the megaphone.
And yeah.
I need stitches. I need stitches. Great. I'll be right there.
Oh, what a good guy you are.
Yeah, I'm the best. Here you go. The viral condom snorting challenge is a dangerous idea.
Oh, I saw this.
Here's why you should never put a condom up your nose.
Wait, who puts one up? When I read these things, I get physically ill. Why would you stick a condom
you
up your nose?
You should see, I saw a visual on social media yesterday.
I have to say, I have not seen this. Nor do I don't think I want to.
One side hanging out one nostril, going up through the nasal passage and the other part coming down the other half, like this. Nasal floss.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I use like a nasal cleanser that goes one in one nostril out the other, but I think it's good for me.
Yeah.
I don't
like
this.
Neti pot. Yeah. That's a neti pot.
Exactly.
This is a...
Okay. Well, the condom challenge is dangerous.
She's a doctor. Let her read this one to her. We want to get her opinion. Okay. We want your opinion on this.
Condom challenge.
You want to read it? You can read it if you want.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's a dangerous years-old dare that involves sticking an unwrapped condom on one up one nostril and inhaling it until it hopefully reemerges into the person's mouth. Oh, from mouth to nostril. Gross. Super dangerous idea. Not only immediate choking hazard, which that just a side note, choking hazard's a phrase we use in our house a lot. Because we have a 2-year-old and my 4-year-old's always like, choking hazard. He's always screaming it out. He's like, I can't give her this. Choking hazard, because he wants it for himself.
Right.
Yep. But condoms can also get stuck and cause more long-term damage. You think? It's like chemical, rubbery.
But it says unwrapped. Unwrapped.
Isn't the kids eating the laundry pods?
Oh,
the Tide Pod Challenge is, again.
Same.
Parents.
Like, party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I see my kid with a Tide Pod Challenge, he's going to have a fist in the face challenge.
Right.
Sorry. I don't know. It's more metaphorically. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. But why? I don't understand.
Because the internet. Well, did you read? There was one, and I don't remember. This was a year ago, where this guy. It was some really big challenge where these kids had to do like 12 steps to prove how tough they were. One was like burn yourself, cut yourself, and then kill an animal.
What?
And they went up in degrees, and they said it's because they're building they're trying to mentally control kids by teaching them how tough they are. It was amazing when I read it. It was like a year ago. I was like, oh my God, this is so sick. I don't want anybody. I keep saying my son did. Well, they're very good about it. They don't let their kids just peruse the internet.
No, you can't. And here's real quick. The nose is designed to be the body's air filter, cleaning the air you take in before it lands in the lungs and adding moisture to it along the way. It's a delicate system that's not designed to take in condoms.
It's disgusting.
I think that should be common sense, but you know. And that's it for headlines and headaches.
All right, so then we've got mail. And mail's in. Is mail in?
Mail's in.
Yes, it just got delivered.
All righty.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day. All right, email number one. Dear One Tough Mother, I have a sticky situation to ask you about. I have condoms in my nose. No, I'm just kidding.
Gross.
My neighbor of 22 years owns a home repair company. He builds decks, remodels houses, does replacement windows, and more. You name it, the guy does it. He is super talented. Well, last fall, Bert saw me standing on my porch looking around. He walked over and asked me what I was up to. So I showed him that the floorboards were starting to rot and that steps were getting wobbly and beginning to pull away from the porch. He said, hey, neighbor, that's no big deal. We'll take care of this for you immediately. Why would you ask anyone else? It only takes us 3 days and we'll give you our friends and family discount. I instantly took him up on his offer and told him to let me know immediately what he needed to start. Well, that all happened in the beginning of September and no work was ever done. In fact, I reminded him a couple of times last fall and he said I was his next job, but nothing happened. Well, now it's March, spring, and summer are coming and we want our porch fixed now. I saw Bert yesterday and I yelled, hey Bert, how you doing? He threw up his hand and quickly walked into his house without saying a word. It seemed he was either in a rush or avoided me. Now my question, should I just walk over to his house, knock on the door, and ask Bert point blank if he's still interested in doing the job, or should I just contact someone else? My wife thinks that since we've been neighbors for over 20 years that he'll be offended if I hire someone else. I think he'll be relieved. What do you think?
I think you walk over and knock on the guy's door. Shannon?
I think he's telling you already he doesn't want to do the job.
Right.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you're just your neighbor for 20 years, guy to guy, you know, me, everyone, men are different. I'm from the Northeast. I know you're from Minnesota, but
Detroit, though, where I went to undergrad.
Okay, so you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. Call it out.
Yeah, we just say like, dude, are you gonna do this or what?
Right.
It'd be that simple. Like, I don't think guys with this kind of stuff would get as emotional. But if you don't address it, then it's gonna fester and you're gonna start getting pissed and you're gonna end up like, you know, throwing snowballs at his house or something.
I was going to say, this sounds like every other contractor I've ever worked with, though, really.
So right. Absolutely.
They never say no.
Yeah. No, it's true. But you know what happens with me is, and I have a lot of professional people like that do construction and stuff that are friends of mine. And actually, my builder is a very dear friend of mine. I don't like to ask them. I don't, because of this. And because it's like they always
friends and,
right.
and stuff.
He they offered. Always say to me, oh, Kara, yeah. no, dude, I'll no, Kara, I'll take care of it for you. I'll take care of it. And then I'm sitting there waiting and waiting mm-hmm. and waiting. And then I get pissed off because I'm like, well, are you coming? Are you not coming? Should I be calling somebody? So now I don't even ask them. I don't, even if they come over and they'll be like, hey, Karen, what are you doing? I'll say, I'm fixing this or that's got to be fixed. They'll be like, yeah, I'll take care of that. No, dude, it's okay. I already called somebody. I lie.
I got the answer. And I know what to do. You go up to him and say, obviously you're a little too busy for this. Can you recommend someone else to do it for me? I don't want to. And it's all cool, and I got no hard feelings, but can you recommend someone mm-hmm. else? Don't tell
oh,
me
that's gonna, a good one.
Don't tell me you're going to do it. If he starts saying, oh, no, it's like, no, it's okay, dude. I know you're busy, and I know you mean well. But just can you recommend someone else? That's
all right. All. Yeah, okay, I agree with you on that one.
And move. And immediately.
And then move immediately.
Yes. Get out of my neighborhood. I don't like you anymore, Bert. Okay.
Bert.
All right, let's move on. Email number two. Dear OTM, is it wrong to ignore someone you hate or don't like? I have a girl in my class I really don't like. She bullies other kids, pushes everyone around, and thinks she is cool. She never really talked to me before, but for some reason now she started with me. She says stuff like, hey, what's your name? Why are you always looking at me? Or, hey, didn't anyone ever tell you it's rude to ignore people? I know this is going to explode because I've seen her do this with other kids. She's so messed up. I just avoid or ignore her, but for some reason she takes my staying quiet and ignoring her as a threat. What should I do? Signed, sixth grader.
Ignore yeah. until it gets out of hand and then tell the teacher.
It's a tough spot.
Or tell your mother. You have to. You know what? This is the deal. It is a very tough spot. And we've all been in this spot. I mean, there's been people. And she sees the pattern. Smart girl, by the way. Or I guess it's a girl, but smart kid. Sees the pattern of what this girl's doing. And the girl's not getting attention anymore from the people she bullied. Or it's boring. Or she's over it. Now she's going to bully you. Go to somebody about it. That's my suggestion.
Now, if they can find common ground, though, sometimes you find, like, if he approached her and was like, hey, do you want a piece of gum? Hey, she might just soften right now and think, oh, good, he does really like me.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe
right?
She's afraid he doesn't like her.
You know, it's funny. We know these people in our lives that have that personality that just everyone likes them. Mm-hmm. They're like the one person who gets along with every group, and, you know, and we'd all like to be that. I was not that person, but we all admire that person, especially later in life. You realize, mm-hmm. It's tough to teach a sixth grader that, to, you know, either kind of have it naturally or you don't.
And you don't want to peak in sixth grade. That's what I tell my kid. I'm like, you know, if you're really, really the favorite in high school, you know, and you kind of peak too soon.
I like
you're
that.
A disappointment at the reunion. So give them something to look Ooh. Forward to.
That's me at the 30th anniversary. Oh, remember Seth? He had hair? Oh, man.
Well, or what is our suggestion to her? Just talk to somebody about it, right? Don't let it just
or try,
go.
You know, try to be nice. Try to be nice.
Yeah.
You kill them with kindness, right?
Gum.
Gum's a big one.
Okay, food.
Doctor says gum.
Fortnite.
Food
yeah.
is big.
Just say, hey, we should play Fortnite sometime.
Oh, God.
Yeah. There you go. Sixth grade's a perfect age.
Somebody
for
turn
that.
Off his mic.
It's probably really good advice. Okay. Last email of the day. Dear One Tough Mother, I hate Facebook. I used to be on it a lot. I talked to all my friends, bought things online, and liked following other people. But 7 months ago, because of my ex-boyfriend, I had to deactivate my account. But I have a question. Last week on your show, you said you can never really quit or delete Facebook. What do you mean?
You can't. No. First of all, you have to understand, and I've always said this to my kids because my kids grew up as computers were really becoming popular. Once you push enter on a computer, it lives and breathes forever. It goes from your computer to a central server somewhere in this country. I know the central server for the East Coast, because I had to deal with this in a lawsuit years ago, is in Virginia. So it goes through a central server there. Now, I'm sure there's, since that lawsuit many, many years ago, there's probably 10 times more central mm-hmm. servers around, but it's going to live and breathe somewhere, and it will be able to be tracked down at some point. The same with text messaging on your phone, which people didn't realize and didn't know when I found that out from a lawsuit. When you text message somebody on your phone, again, it's going through a central server somewhere. Verizon has a cloud. The cloud is not owned by Verizon. It's owned by somewhere else. So all of that stuff is floating around, and it can be retrieved. Mm. And it has been retrieved for lawsuits. So you got to be careful what you put out there. And if you think that you delete your Facebook, you turn on Facebook off, you take your profile down, you get your files from Facebook, whatever the case may be. Dude, whatever you wrote on Facebook prior to all the stuff that you did to get off of Facebook is going to be there.
Frightening.
Yeah.
It's a little good thing that we didn't have social media when I was a kid.
Me too.
Tell me about it. I'd have been in trouble. I think for her deactivating her account, I don't know how deep she wants to go, but nobody can look at, the average person's not going to see your stuff or anything anymore when you deactivate. So
right.
I think maybe she's a little worried about that. I think if you're deactivated for a regular person, you should be okay.
Right, right. Well, she was asking about last week because I said that last week.
And you know, there are other things you can do also. If you enjoyed Facebook, you can block people. You know, we know this. You can block people from seeing your stuff. So if this boyfriend's bothering you online or anything, you can easily block them.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, just, and again, this is just a precautionary situation or precautionary comment. Please, whatever you put on social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, any of those things, know they can and will be searched if there's need to be. And there's no way that you can deny them, honestly, because I've been through things where it's amazing that people have your information.
Or just don't do anything stupid online.
I mean,
I know we're young and we all would have done, like you said, you're glad it wasn't around when you were younger, doctor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of keyboard confidence. People say and do things with the confidence of a keyboard and the anonymity, but then it's out there.
It's like even safer than, like, you know, when you get mad when you're driving, you know, because all of a sudden we have these, like, couple tons of steel with us. We feel real strong. We're driving and everybody gets a road rage. But this is like even easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Because then they got that person who challenges you on the road and then all of a sudden it gets scary.
Yeah, it's watch what you say, watch what you do. Just don't put things out there just to put them out there. Just know that. And, you know, calling somebody out or being a bully or any of that stuff, it's going to be there. It's there.
Not to open up a whole other conversation, but this is kind of stuff I think schools need to start talking about curriculum-wise, about, you know, the pitfalls and the dangers of doing things online and everything. It's like life lessons.
Kids in general are more unhappy. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's attributed to social media, because people who are excluded or view their life as boring or uneventful or that they're unliked, they see all this false performance of this perfect life being played out on the screen of social media, and it contributes to depression, especially among adolescents. But there's times even when I see it, I go, why didn't I get invited to that? You know? Makes you feel bad.
I agree with you. And that's why we have to be careful with our kids' social media.
Right. So today's Mother Says is, it is, and it's actually a quote by Oprah.
Oh, I love Oprah.
Odd. I brought up Oprah. So it says, you get in life what you have the courage to ask for. True story. Right?
Yep. Don't be afraid.
Right? Because everybody has a problem with the ask, but you get in life what you have the courage to ask for. So go out there and ask, and you never know what you're going to get. Thank you, Dr. Klingman.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming from Minnesota. What a fun thing. I'm going to go to Minnesota and see what it looks like.
I've been there.
Is it fun?
It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. I've been to Detroit over.
10,000 lakes. 10,000 lakes.
I took my mom to the Mayo Clinic, and I pulled over just to look at the stars. She was scared to get out of the car. My mom was like, she actually was mad later that she didn't get out of the car. I said, I just wanted to get out and look at the sky. It was just, you know, unbelievable.
I went to Detroit and drove up and down 8 Mile.
I love Detroit.
That's what I did. Yeah. That was my big thing.
And you put your hood on and started rapping?
No, yeah. I had an appointment. I had to go talk to somebody in Detroit. And that was my whole game plan, was to take that car and just drive up and down 8 Mile just so I could say I did it. Because I love Eminem. Anyway, it's been a great show. Thank you, Dr. Klingman. Everybody, check out Lumi. Lume. It's great stuff. I love it. I'm using it. Seth, come over and sniff me and see if I smell.
Talk to you, everybody,
soon. Have a good week.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.